Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. Frank, thank you so much for joining us today.
Always fun to be here with you, and happy St. Patrick's Day to you.
Thank you. Same to you, too. Are you going to be dressed in green on St. Patrick's Day?
Certainly do my best.
Ah, and what are you going to do when you get dressed in green?
I think there's a work day issue.
Oh, shucks. You know, I always thought that we could have fun on St. Patrick's Day. And maybe we'll do something in court, right?
You never know. We'll just keep them guessing, Sue.
What a strategy. All right. So what have we got, Frank?
Well, a few weeks ago, we were in here and we were talking about the Virginia legislative slate for this year's session, which is still going on down the Virginia legislature. And I talked about what I thought were some of the worst bills before the legislature, and we were pretty concerned about four of them in particular. And I think today we can report on what has happened with those, where they are now. And the bottom line is we've got some good news to report.
All right, I always like good news. So what's the good news?
Well, the first bill that we discussed the last time was Senate Bill 388. And that was the bill that discussed the Office of the Attorney General and the role of the Office of the Attorney General in consumer protection affairs. And what we had was a transfer of investigative and consumer complaint and dispute resolution functions for certain consumer protection laws from the Office of Consumer Affairs within the Department of Agriculture and Consumer Affairs to the Division of Consumer Affairs within the Office of the Attorney General. And we went through last time the list of 18 different statutes over which the Office of the Attorney General will exercise oversight and be able to actually intervene and protect homeowners. And we complained that among these 18 statutes, which include such things as the Virginia Home Solicitation Act, the Automobile Repair Facilities Act, the Collision Damage Waiver Act, the Comparison Price Advertising Act, the Virginia Health Spa Act, the Virginia Membership Camping Act, the Prizes and Gifts Act, the Pay-Per-Call Services Act, and I won't bore you with the list of all 18, but nowhere on this list, Shu, does the Property Owners Association Act or the Condominium Act appear at all on this list of 18 statutes. So,
is that good news?
That is not good news. We are left with nothing more than a fairly powerless ombudsman. But the good news is that we've heard that the Attorney General himself is particularly interested in expanding, perhaps beyond what's in this statutory language, the authority of his office to intervene on behalf of consumers. And I think there's some real reason to believe that the Attorney General considers homeowners association issues to be consumer protection issues, as we have been arguing on this show and in other venues for years.
I think we need to go down and see him and educate him or somehow get to him.
Well, you got to remember, he was newly elected.
Yes.
Barely inaugurated at the time this thing came through, and he might not have had the opportunity to do too much with it. So we'll have to take a close look at what he does in the first year, and we will look at the legislative proposals that come out of his office. And it's for that reason, as opposed to what's in this bill, that I'm a little bit optimistic that we may get something more than a powerless ombudsman who can do very little other than, refer people to the POA or, send them to some CAI-affiliated source of information.
the Ombudsman's Office was designed to be a placebo. It was never intended
We pointed that out very eloquently, I thought, when we criticized House Bill 516, that it was nothing more than a placebo. And so we'll see whether our new Attorney General can do what it appears he wants to do, and offer some protection to the homeowners of Virginia. I think if we can bring the Attorney General's office into the Virginia Health Spa Act, we really ought to be bringing the Attorney General into proceedings that occur non-judicially that can result in homeowners losing their homes.
Did that bill pass, Frank? Do you know?
That bill was still on track, and I didn't see any indication that they were going to amend it to put any other language in there. I'm sorry, Sue. That bill was defeated in general laws in the Senate, and our senator, Senator Peterson, and Senator Marsden both voted against the bill.
Wow.
So I don't know that they voted against the bill because it didn't go far enough or for some other reason.
Probably some other reason.
Yeah. But that bill appears to be dead as a doornail.
Okay. Now, that wasn't the only bill out there that we were interested in, was it?
No, it was not by any means. The bill that we identified as potentially the worst bill was House Bill 468, and that bill went to the that bill went to the Office of Professional the Virginia Department of Professional and Occupational Regulation, same list of statutes. And that bill was amended, and it now seems harmless because that bill would have taken away from the director of that department the ability, the very limited ability that he has to review complaints coming from homeowners associations if the governing documents of the association themselves, he couldn't look beyond the governing documents themselves, and if the governing documents tracked with federal and state law, that was the end of what he could do. And that bill went down to defeat. The worst language of it was stricken on February 11th by amendments. And that bill now seems harmless. So the language that bothered us about it is now gone. And the harmless language passed by a vote of 22-0 on the House side. So that is...
But then it'll cross over and go to the Senate.
It'll cross over and go to the Senate, but it'll go with, without that bad language.
Okay, so
and there was not a Senate counterpart introduced to it. Sometimes, as you saw with House Bill 516
right.
last year, they introduce companion bills.
Yeah.
And Mary Margaret Whipple introduced a companion bill on the Senate side, but that didn't happen with this one.
That's just double the trouble, isn't it?
It is. But we got the worst language out of it, so.
You know, it's never ending. I mean, they keep coming up with all this garbage.
They do, Shu, and they seem to have a propensity to do it in the what they call in Virginia the short sessions. Every other session of the Virginia legislature is a short session. They're only down there for
6 weeks.
I think it is 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And
the long session's 8 weeks or something.
Yeah.
It's not that much more.
But they like to get these things in, I guess, when they don't think there's going to be as much time for public comment, public scrutiny. and for folks like you and I to get the word out?
I don't know. It's you know, I've got to tell you before we move on too far, you were talking about that really bad bill last year, 2 years ago.
516?
516.
Yeah.
And CAI, you know, as you know, I went to the CAI Law Seminar, Frank, and they're using that as an example of a brilliant piece of work that they did, and this is one of the things their lax did. It's being used as a model. They're going to take it all over the place. And they're calling it the licensing law. You know, they want to license.
Oh, yeah. Managers. And for folks who are not heavily involved in this and don't look beyond the superficial way that this thing is spun, that has a lot of appeal.
Yeah, it does.
It sounds like that there's going to be real governmental oversight in the licensing process and then in the standards to keep a license. And nobody looks beyond that and say, okay, now who's actually going to be in charge of implementing this? What government agency do I turn to? And what they did in Virginia and what I'm sure they'll try to do in other states is they'll try to put their industry.
And they're going to control the whole thing.
Yeah, from top to bottom.
They're going to control it, absolutely.
When they drafted House Bill 516, as you remember, they set up what was initially a nine-person common interest community board.
Right.
And every swing and Richard on the board was a trade association guy.
Absolutely.
And there was not a single person on that nine-member board that was designed to protect the rights and the interests of homeowners, if you believe the propaganda, who was even required to live in a common interest community. Mm-hmm. Not one.
One of them had to have been at some point a board member, but didn't have to be. Terry Suit says, well, you know, do I have to live in it? I just gotta own it because if I wanna get off this and if I'm no longer a legislator and I might wanna serve on this committee and I wanna be able to serve on this committee, but
yeah,
I don't wanna have to live in one of these.
Especially if the contributions kept on coming in.
Right. Well, she knew she was gonna leave and become a lobbyist, but she doesn't live in one. She said, I wanna have to live in one. I just wanna sit on this panel.
Yeah. Well, anyway, she's sitting on some other lobbying panel these days.
She's doing some lobbying, okay.
But I think, you know, there's some information we posted on richmondsunlight.com about contributions to former delegate Terry Suit that you might want to check out. I think if you Google House Bill 516 Virginia with the name Terry, T-E-R-R-I-E, Suit, S-U-I-T, you'll find out what we were talking about.
She's still in the Richmond area, but she's not a legislator anymore. And after she did her devastation, I guess some of the legislators have come back piecemeal and tried to clean up some of it. Over the last couple of years, not enough.
No,
they need to throw the whole thing out.
Not enough. When you and I went down to Richmond to testify in front of the Senate General Laws and Technology Committee, they on the spot put in an amendment that required two of the members of that Virginia Common Interest Community Board to actually live in associations.
Yeah.
And the industry came back and they said, well, you know, boy, this is very troubling. Now we'll have to go and bring in somebody from the Virginia timeshares community and, you know, expand the power of the trade association membership even further. And they did that. But two seats are on there, so no doubt they'll be canvassing all over Virginia to find a couple of homeowners who have had lobotomies and get the governor to try to put them on there so CAI can tell them what to do.
Frank, the place is crawling with them. I mean, some of these homeowners and board members are worse than CII ever thought of being.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So I mean, it's not that hard to find. And the thing is, you know, when you look at a place like Fairfax County, where over 90% of all housing is in an HOA, and that's not just limited to Fairfax. It's Loudoun, which I think is higher, and then you've got Prince William and all of these, the Northern Virginia area especially, and I think increasingly down around the Richmond area. You know what they had the audacity to say? Kind of hard to find people who live in these things.
Yes, I remember that.
You remember that one?
Yeah.
Where are we going to find homeowners who live in associations? Yeah. Gee whiz, I don't know.
Yep.
Where do you think you're going to find them, dingbats?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, therein lies the power of the governor, because he appoints these people, and he's got to appoint them according to the criteria set forth in the statute. So he's stuck with trade association members, but maybe when he looks for a couple of homeowners, he won't let CAI recommend to him who the homeowners ought to be, and maybe we'll get some people with an interest in consumer protection.
Frank, I guess I'm just curious as to whether the governor has the authority to come in and declare that sort of somewhat unethical. I mean, I think it's unethical. You don't have a consumer panel there made up of people, you know, foxes guarding the hen house.
Well, no, you don't. But the governor is stuck with the language of the statute, and so he's stuck with that pool from which he has to pick his nominees. And you know, I haven't encountered a whole lot of CAIers who really strike me as being spectacularly interested in protecting the rights of homeowners as consumers.
There's one person, and I think that's Bob Segan, and I would like to have him. I mean, he said he would come on the show and talk about it.
Well, I hope he will. You know, I've read the newsletters posted by his law firm's website, and I agree with you that he appears to at least be objective and not trying to use his newsletters as a CAI advocacy tools the way some of these other people have. He recognizes in his newsletters that there's a fundamental constitutional issue in Virginia to allowing these homeowners associations to fine people.
Right, right.
And our late lamented friend Fred Goldbecker also told us that of the CAI law firms that Fred had dealt with, Fred considered Mr. Segan's firm to be the most ethical and the most principled.
I don't know that it was the firm. I think it was Bob Segan himself.
Well, that may be.
Yeah, I don't think he ran into too many people in the firm, but yeah, he did. He really liked Bob Segan, so and he told both of us on a number of occasions that he thought he was the most ethical. So we got any more bills, or is that pretty much
it? We have two more.
Two more.
House Bill 496. This was the one, you remember we talked about Delegate Lingenfelter from the Woodbridge area.
Yeah.
And this is the one in which associations would have been granted additional authority with regard to fining people. The way the Property Owners Association Act is written right now, fines by an association are tolled after a period of 90 days. So as a practical matter, the maximum amount that an association can fine you based on a $10 a day fine for a violation of their rules or regulations is $900. And House Bill 496 would have increased that period to 180 days. So instead of a $900 cap, you'd have an $1,800 cap.
So for 6 months, funds. Every single day, you would have to pay
$10. And then, of course, we'd have, you know, legal fees tied onto that. And then we'd have collection costs tied onto that. And then they would be able to non-judicially foreclose simply to collect that fine, mm-hmm. Which is disgraceful. And anyway, that particular bill was left in general laws. That is dead. It did not get out of the general laws committee.
Oh, cool.
And our delegate, David Bolova, voted to kill that. The vote to kill it in the general laws was a subcommittee, actually. Recommended 5-2 to kill it. And as of February 16th, that bill was dead.
Dead as a doornail. You know, Frank, are you done with that one, or you got more you want to say?
Well, the only other thing I wanted to say on that was the Virginia Legislative Action Committee of CAI, and we've talked about that committee mm-hmm. in the past. If you go to their website,
that's the Wolf Bound.
Yeah, they the Virginia Legislative Action Committee is like a pack of wolves. That's the way they describe themselves on their own website.
We're not saying anything nasty.
And they said, you know, a lone wolf is often a hungry wolf, and so all of you trade association people out there, you need to send us money. So that we can get you money. And the question we asked was, where is that money going to come from? All that money is going to come from the homeowners.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
But anyway, in their synopsis of Virginia legislation that you can download from their website, they said that they supported that legislation.
Of course.
And Delegate Lingam Felter is going to be disappointed, and I think we pointed out, in fairness to Delegate Lingam Felter, he's had good ideas in the past. He's had some proposals in the past that were pretty protective of individual rights, and he's a big Second Amendment rights supporter. So he understands that there are limits to the power of the real government, and I just wish he would take more seriously the rights of homeowners against these community association governments. And hopefully, in the discussions down there, Delegate Lingam Felter learned some lessons. And hopefully, he won't be back with another bill along these lines.
Well, Frank, we're going to do something today that we haven't done for a long time.
We're going to sing?
No. Actually, I just got back from Houston, and they wanted to know if I could sing Danny Boy. But But we're going to take a break, a short break, and we'll be right back right after this.
Then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, tell me why you hurry so. Hush me, Buckle, hush and listen, and his cheeks were all aglow. I bear orders from the captain, get you ready quick and soon. For the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon.
And we're back. This is WBR Fairfax Radio. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and joining us today we have Frank Short, who's here to do his annual St. Patrick's Day show. And, of course, we have a ton of wonderful stuff for you. It is the legislative season, and there's a few lawsuits out there as well. So what else have we got, Frank? We've talked about a number of stuff there.
Well, we have House Bill 1102 from our very own Delegate Sickles from up here in the Kingstown area.
Oh, did delegate circles.
Well, delegate circles hasn't been heard from in a while on these.
Needs to be slapped down again.
Well, it's been a few years, but yeah. Delegate Sickles, a few years ago, introduced a bill that we talked about on the show. And the intent behind that bill would have been to allow a board of directors to keep secret from the homeowners and discuss in executive session and not provide any advance copy to the homeowners of draft policy resolutions. They would have been...
Minutes.
Well, draft policy resolutions, draft minutes, anything that was still a draft.
Yeah.
Homeowners wouldn't have had a right to see them until the board actually voted on them. And, you know, there are just a number of problems with that. And one of the things that we pointed out in our correspondence to the Virginia legislature was, well, you know, boys... that would be the same as keeping us from looking at your draft bills and then writing to you about them until you actually passed the bills. And because these community associations have de facto governmental powers, and what they can do in a policy resolution or a lure is likely to have a much more significant impact on the day-to-day life of somebody who lives in that association. And since the Property Owners Association, for that very reason, gives homeowners the right to address the board during the open session of all board meetings, you can't really intelligently address the board about a policy resolution that they're going to vote on if you haven't been able to view a draft copy of the policy resolution. But somebody sold Senator or Delegate Sickles that bill of goods, and he introduced it. We contacted the legislature, and they shot it down. So,
well, then I called him and said, what are you doing? He says, well, don't you think the board has the right to make sure that what they said was accurate before the minutes go out? I said, don't you think a homeowner has that same right?
Yeah, but it was well beyond the minutes. It was draft policy resolution,
yeah,
and that was my...
Yeah, but that was the minutes was what he had talked about.
Yep.
And
Anyway, Delegate Sickles came back this year with House Bill 1102. And what I thought was going on in House Bill 1102 was two very interesting things. Number one, the case White versus Boundary Association was a Virginia Supreme Court case from a couple of years ago. And what went on in that case was the board of directors of this association established a parking rule that just happened to be in direct conflict with the rights of homeowners under the covenants, the property right that they had under the covenants to use the common areas. And in general, what you'll find in your governing documents is you'll have a provision in the covenants called property rights. And those will say, these are your rights to use the common area, subject to, and then it will specify what rights, if any, the board of directors has to make rules and regulations governing the parking areas. Well, the homeowner in White versus Boundary Association said, well, wait a minute. These guys on the board of directors are exceeding their rights under the governing documents, and they're impinging on my right to park in the common areas. That is vested in me under this covenant.
Mm-hmm.
Went to the Virginia Supreme Court, and the Virginia Supreme Court had no problem finding that the board of directors had exceeded their authorities. So that was objective number one of Delegate Sickles' bill, to try to legislatively overturn that Virginia Supreme Court case. I think that's what they wanted to do, even though the bill begins with the language, to the extent that the declaration gives the board of directors the authority to adopt rules and regulations relating to the parking of motor vehicles by lot owners. So they were trying to maybe attack the edges of the White versus Boundary Association. The other thing that they wanted is, what do they always want in these associations, Jim?
They want money.
They want money. And so this bill went on to say that such rules may establish a parking space designation plan which makes parking spaces available to less than all of the lot owners. And it would allow the board to do that without a vote by the owners. And the concern with that is, well, what about minority rights? And of course, the money was not something that was going to escape CAI or Delegate Sickles, and the bill went on to provide that the amount of all common expenses not specially assessed pursuant to Section B, and let me read you Section B, if such a plan is adopted, the common expenses attributable to such parking spaces shall be specially assessed against the lot owners involved. The board may impose reasonable user fees. So, ka-ching, ka-ching for the association, and ka-ching, ka-ching for the CAI lawyers who are going to litigate these things. And
there's more money for the managers.
More money. And Section C said the amount of all common expenses not specially assessed pursuant to subsection B shall be assessed equally against all the lot owners. Such assessment shall be made by the association annually or more often if the declaration so provides. So here you have yet a new revenue stream coming into associations. Now, the other thing that I think this bill was trying to do was, we talked about the bill from Senator Vogel.
Yeah.
And this was, I think, in the 2008 legislative session. And what Senator Vogel's bill would have done would have been to allow the board of directors, after they went three times to the homeowners and tried in an attempt to get a change to the governing documents passed by a homeowner vote, if they didn't succeed, in other words, if the homeowners told them no three times in accordance with the governing documents, the board of directors would be able to say, well, homeowners, hell with you. We're going to court. And a judge would be able to order a change to the governing documents, and without any vote by the homeowners, or in spite of three votes to the negative by the homeowners, the judge will say, well, the governing documents now change. So there you are. Anyway, Senator Vogel, after a firestorm of protest and complaint, withdrew that bill herself. But this is probably one of the changes that they had in mind, because I guarantee you, Sue, what they had in mind was other forms of revenue stream that they could produce that homeowners would not have voted for under the governing documents.
Well, you know, there are a few things that came across loud and clear at the CAI seminar. Number one, they're having financial problems in associations across the country. Property values, they're in the toilet. Associations aren't protecting them. That's pure and utter bunk. It's absolute nonsense. So, but the other thing that I found particularly offensive, Frank, was there was a one of the presenters said that I think of the board members as the parents and all those homeowners out there as the children. So the parents, you deal with the parents, and the parents decide. The parents make these decisions, and the children have to live with it. Basically, and what does that make CAI? This little whippy, snappy little attorney is a grandmother all of a sudden? I mean, she's the one who's telling the parents what to do?
Yep. Well, this thing is not fully dead. Some of the most objectionable language is taken out. Section C is taken out in its entirety, and Section B has been modified to take out the reference to a user fee. So essentially the revenue stream has been largely shut down, and now what was left as it cleared the House, Section B would say, if such a plan is adopted, the common expenses attributable to such parking areas may, instead of shall, be specially assessed against the lot owners involved. And we'll have to see how that flies in the Senate. But that is another very bad piece of legislation, and hopefully the Senate will finish it off.
One can only hope.
Yep.
So when does, do you know when the session ends?
I do not.
Should be coming right up here, huh?
Yeah, I don't think there's very much time left.
All right. And do we have anything else?
Well, Shu, we do. We've got a case out of Florida, and this also touches on the Senator Vogel concept, and it indicates that, you know, Senator Vogel's idea was by no means limited to Virginia. This is something, as you've said in the past, that CAI wants to take national.
Yeah.
And they want to be able to get these governing documents amended without a vote by the homeowners. And what was going on in Florida, the name of this case is Cohen, C-O-H-N, versus the Grand Condominium Association, Incorporated.
Where did they come up with these names from?
I don't know. But you can find this at 2009 Florida Appellate Lexus 16833, Florida Appellate 2009. I'll say that again for anybody out there with a law degree. 2009 Florida Appellate Lexus 16833, Florida Appellate 2009. And here you had a condominium that was created in 1986, and it was a mixed-use a condominium, which means that it had not only residences in it, but it had a hotel,
mm-hmm.
it had retail stores, it had commercial units, and when it was set up in 1986, there was no statute about mixed-unit condominiums in Florida. What that meant was that the Articles of Incorporation and the bylaws of the condo created a board of directors. And the board of directors was controlled by the unit owners and the retail owners. And so then we fast forward from 1986 to 1995, and the Florida legislature enacts a statute that that addresses the voting rights in mixed-use condominiums. And that statute provides that the number of residential units in a condominium, when that number equals or exceeds 50% of the units, then the owners in the residential units shall be entitled to vote for a majority of the seats on the board of directors. So if you have a nine-member board, like we do where we live, the residents would actually be able to elect five of the nine, even if they had 75% of the of the lots of the units. Well, the hotel and the commercial people and the non-homeowner owners
mm-hmm.
would still be able to control those other seats. So this was challenged, and the Florida court said refreshingly, as have courts in Virginia, including the Virginia Supreme Court in a case called Lake Monticello Owners Association versus Lake, Jared Lake. They said, hey, you basically have a government here. And you have this board of directors has governmental powers. And so the ability of the homeowners and the people who live under that government to be able to vote on issues is very, very important. What the Homeowners Association in Lake Monticello was attempting to do was keep a proposed bylaw change from being introduced by the homeowners. The board of directors said, oh, we don't think that's a good idea. So you're not going to be allowed to. We're not going to put it on the ballot.
The parents making the decisions,
yeah.
Frank.
So the court says, well, the voting arrangements in these things are very important, and this Florida statute impairs the existing contractual relationship. What does that remind you of that we talked about a minute ago? You have Senator Vogel.
Yeah.
So here we have a bill of goods that was sold to the Florida legislature that would have substantially impaired a contractual relationship. Well, CAI doesn't like the contractual relationships sometimes if they give what CAI thinks is too much power to the homeowners. And the Florida legislature compounded that harm by making the change to the contractual relationship retroactive. Anyway,
judges.
The Florida court said, no, boys. You can't do that. It's unconstitutional. And we don't hear
that.
We don't hear that. It was unconstitutional.
No.
It's an impairment of the obligation of a contract. So I hope that other courts will take that to heart, because when you change a statute and you suddenly have homeowners associations authorized to impose fines,
yes,
and there was no such right granted to the association in the initial governing documents, and you wake up the next morning and you say, well, you know, what is this? As we saw in the Gilman case, as we saw in the Foley case, that's kind of what they call unconstitutional. And hopefully people out there will read Gilman and they'll read Foley, both of which are available on SHU's website, and we'll get a legislative win or two along those lines. The real constitutional objection, in my mind, is not going to be based on interference with existing contract rights. The real constitutional objection, as I think Mr. Segan recognized, is that what you have is a delegation by the legislature of a power that belongs under the state constitution to the judiciary here in Virginia, the power to fine, as the Virginia Supreme Court in Gilman said, is a governmental power, and that power may not be exercised or delegated other than in accordance with the constitutions of Virginia or the United States.
Right.
And that means when you look at the Virginia Constitution, within the government of Virginia, because it's a governmental power, the branch of the government that exercises that power is the Virginia judiciary, not the Virginia legislature. And so since the legislature doesn't have that right in the first place to pass a bill to fine Shoe Bartholomew, then they can't delegate that to Shoe Bartholomew's homeowners association.
Makes perfectly good sense to me.
I thought so.
And so what's wrong with the rest of these legislators out there that they don't recognize it or don't understand it?
Well, I really don't know, Shu. They get sold the bill of goods sometimes, and they're told by CAI that CAI speaks for the homeowners. CAI is giving them something that the homeowners have asked for, and that is the biggest crock.
They're still doing that, you know.
Well, they're not doing it in Virginia anymore, but they're doing it on the federal level. If you look at
we represent all these homeowners.
Yes, yeah. And so they need to be called on that every time we catch them doing it. And they've sent some correspondence to members of Congress, and they're right back to their old tricks, saying that CAI speaks for, you know, millions of people who live in homeowners associations. CAI is a trade association. CAI's interest is in maximizing their business interests, which means money from the homeowners.
Well, they, you know, they call themselves the stakeholders, and they, you know, they want to ensure that the business environment is friendly to their business partners and to the stakeholders. And they wrote to me and said something about the stakeholders and want me to join CAI. And, you know, Frank, I'm not a stakeholder. I'm a shareholder, which is so much higher than a stakeholder.
Well, you know, if you watch some of those vampire movies, they do something with the stake.
And you mean the shareholders do something with the stakeholders?
Yeah, yes.
I think it's about bloody time that the shareholders did something with the stakeholders.
I mean, we've both been to meetings where when the homeowners get fed up enough, they show up with everything but the pitchforks.
Yeah. Yeah. I just came back from Houston today, this afternoon, actually, where I went for a seminar with the Texas Homeowners for Reforming HOAs. And it was a marvelous, marvelous group. It was a great seminar, a lot of fun. And we're going to be talking to some of the people there. And we've, you know, we've met some of the members, and we'll be meeting more of them. But one of the people who was there, Frank, was a lady by the name of Dora Olivo. And she's a representative who, she says, has been retired. She just lost the election, but she's still going to be in power for a year until next January. So I don't know why it takes a whole year from the time you get elected to the time you take office. But anyway, that's the way it is. And I talked to her very briefly, and she said that she would come on. But she had some great tips and ideas on how to make your voice heard, how to get the attention of the legislators.
Well, that's the kind of word that we need to get out, because it, you know, CAI has a CAI day in Richmond in which they bring the band and the traveling show down there, and they basically try to schmooze with as many people as they can, especially those that are on the committees that are going to hear these bills first, you know, the general laws and the general laws and technology committees. And they make no apologies for the fact that they're down there, and they've got their agenda. I don't think that when they go see these people in Virginia anymore that they're representing themselves as speaking on behalf of the homeowners, because too many people have called them on it. But in other venues where homeowners haven't called them and they can still get away with it, they're obviously still doing it, because they're doing it at the federal level right now.
They used to have, and I don't know if they still do, maybe they do, but they used to have a legislative day where they all went down to the Capitol downtown, and they met up with all the legislators.
Yeah, CAI day.
The CAI day. You said Richmond.
Washington, yeah. They may be doing it in D.C. too.
Well, they were doing it years and years ago. I mean, I'm talking 10, 12 years ago, because they had a day and it was posted on the Internet. And I thought, well, you know what, if they can go down and talk to them on that day, then there's nothing to stop us from going. So I took a bunch of people, Frank, and we went down there. The whole house was, the entire Capitol was on recess. They were gone. There was not a soul there. It was just the staffers.
Oh.
And so I came back and posted that on the...
Well, staffers can be pretty influential.
Oh, yeah.
When you're talking about actually drafting this legislation.
Oh, no, I know. And, yeah, no, I realize that. But it was the idea that they said, we're going to go and meet all the senators and congressmen, blah, blah, blah. And they happened to pick a day when there was no one in town. You know, they were all on retreat someplace. Frank, we're pretty much out of time.
Well, it's always fun, Shu, and we'll do this again next year and maybe even sooner.
Thank you. And do you realize this is the 11th St. Patrick's Day that you've done?
I did not know that.
Yeah, because you've done 10 on the Commons, and we did one on HOA. You've had every St. Patrick's Day, so that's a lot of St. Patrick's Days that we've been through together here, and I look forward to a few more of them.
Me too, Sue.
So, and again, since this is St. Patrick's Day, we do things a little differently. We'll end the show a little differently.
We always do this the same.
Not my regular show. It's the same. In fact, you complain about my music, but it's the same music. Next time, Frank, you're singing Danny Boy. That's a promise, right?
Yeah.
On the Commons was produced by OTC Multimedia Productions. See you all
Thank
next
you, boys
week.
And girls. We're going to finish up, and it remains with one song, I think, and a song and a ballad written by Thomas Davis. I think Thomas Davis wrote some of our finest national ballads. This one certainly had to be one of his greatest. Here's Tommy to sing with you all, I hope, a nation once again.